Is there anyone who is willing and able to take notes for us today?
Well, I guess I can take the notes this evening.
Is that Scott?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Scott. So I will go ahead and call the meeting to order at 5:35 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And roll call, Aaron Stevens is present. Lloyd Timberlake?
Present.
Nathan Wakefield?
Present.
Scott Krause?
Present.
Jared Davis? Is absent. I just feel like I've got the name. Hillary Yee? Absent. Kyle Johnson? Is absent. Mike Sullivan?
Here.
Great. Cody Furyk is absent. Martin Frost. Okay, is absent. And we'll add Louis Skaradek.
Here.
As well. I'll let you catch up there, Scott.
Thank you.
I can type out his name if you want. Oh, you got it. Mine. Perfect. Okay, and moving to approval of the agenda. Would somebody like to make the motion?
I move. It's Lloyd.
Okay, do we have a second?
This is Scott. I'll make the motion. I'll second.
Second. Okay. Any discussion?
So I do have a quick question. We have four board members present. Is that enough to go through the motions this evening? Or I mean to do the motion?
Quorum. You have to have four present for quorum. So that is enough. And I did add a motion regarding the change in IGA Championships music policy, kind of at mine and Nathan's suggestion both. But I'm not sure if we like the wording on that or we want to adjust that or do it at a later time, but I just wanted to add it there mainly to get the conversation started, even if it's not perfectly worded at this point. Okay, let's move to a vote then. There's no other discussion. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Okay, approval of minutes from April 7th. Do we have a motion?
I move, Lloyd.
Okay, and a second.
This is Scott, all second.
Any discussion? Okay, moving to the vote. Is anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. And approval of the April 27th minutes. Do we have a motion?
I move.
Okay. Second.
Nathan, move.
Great. Any discussion? Motion passes. All right, and moving on to reports. First report is 2014 IGA. Cody, as I indicated in an email, Cody's been at Kinetic Fire and very busy with being the director of that festival as well for the last couple weeks, so he did not turn in a report. I did write one up. Main concern being the housing is still not done. Mike did make a phone call and had some email discussions, and we found out that an email was sent to Cody basically saying that we need to change information on our website to reflect what's accurate. Apparently there's some information that we had originally that wasn't accurate, so they don't want our attendees thinking things are going to be one way when they go to the registration site. So within this next week, we'll get that updated to their liking, hopefully. And then I do not know. They didn't really say anything regarding how quickly the registration site would be ready following that point, as far as I know. Is that correct, Mike?
Yes, that's correct. I also asked the question why it's up to us to post all this information that is Purdue's information. I thought it would be much easier for them to simply give us a link to a page
right.
on their site, and their site discloses all this to everybody. That way they can control it and there's no handoff issues and so on. But don't have an answer
right.
on that yet. I also asked about our Renegade venue, and I'm in touch with the director now. He's going to check on that in the next week, and I expect an answer on that. And then we'll get into the room rates after that and find out why those are being raised contrary to contract.
Okay. Sounds good. So we're having discussions, so that's good. Another discussion that I had this past week, and I wrote about it in the report for people who read it, was with the Visitors Bureau. They call it Visit Purdue now, but it's the Convention Bureau in West Lafayette. And they were super helpful, and apparently they're the ones who originally found Mike and heard about our festival and wanted to bring it to Purdue at Convention Center and stuff. So they were kind of part of the contracting process. They were very surprised to hear about the Renegade Stage situation as well, and we're like, oh, yeah, Susan made it sound like the ballroom would be perfect, and they turned it into a pub, and there'd be couches and all this. And so they were kind of confused by why they then said that we couldn't do it there and stuff. They did give a couple other options for potential Renegade sites that were better than the Armory, which was what our past conference liaison had recommended, and it looked horrible, and it's like a gym, and it wasn't very great at all. So they did give some alternative options. And they're going to make these cool little packets for our attendees with coupons to local restaurants and with a map and with different goodies and stuff like that. So it's super, super friendly of them and do a lot of local promotion for us as well. So that's great. Hopefully that'll help us get local sales for the tickets and everything for the shows. Any other questions or discussion for the festival?
I think it's a little interesting that there was only 3 teams that entered prelim.
3 teams?
That's right. There's only 3 team championship entries. So
yeah.
Unless somebody doesn't qualify, they're all getting medals.
And Vivica's pretty much already told me they all qualify there. She's just going to allow them all in because all of their routines are good enough to be in. So,
hi, this is Mark.
Yeah.
We've many times in the past had only a few teams. It varies.
That's what I thought
from
too.
Here to here.
That's what I thought too, yeah. I know teams have had less in the past than some others. Also, there were no Japanese teams this year, as far as I know. So,
1 year we had.
For our, half of our competition last year, so. But lots of Japanese individuals.
I think in L.A. we only had two teams. I just came in, and have you talked about the housing situation?
We have.
Sorry, I'm late.
We talked about it, yeah. Did you get the last email that Mike sent to us?
I got an email a day or two ago, but it didn't
right.
indicate a resolution to the problem.
It didn't indicate a resolution. Basically, just said that they're waiting on us to put information on our website. Cody gets back from his other festival that he's currently directing this weekend, tomorrow, I'm assuming.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, we have a scheduled call for Tuesday. Mainly need to check in with him and make sure we can get those updates made as soon as possible. If that's what they are waiting on from us, like, that seems silly to not be willing to post the registration site, but and then move forward.
I understand,
there.
But the changes that they seem to be asking for are pretty, you know, 5 minutes worth
minimal.
Of work.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And why didn't that get done?
Or somebody else. What's that?
Yes, exactly. Don't wait for Cody. And furthermore, it should have been done in April when Cody got the email. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Why it didn't.
I agree. I'm not sure. I have not talked to him since that happened. So I do know that for the past 2 weeks, because he was a director of this other festival, he's been very slammed as well. So unfortunately, unfortunately, I mean, it was May 5th, and that's the first time we'd ever heard of it, even though we released the website in February. So the fact that it's taken that long is pretty crazy to me. But yeah, I'm happy to see the changes be made as soon as possible. I have no access to the website. We can forward that on to David and get it done.
Certainly. Let's just get David to do it. I don't know who else might have access, but I don't think it involves very much work.
I know Cody does, so I was going to just have him do it like when he got back, but we can just have David do it and it wouldn't take too long. But since 2 days ago, I've been completely busy, so I haven't been able to address that either. So, unfortunately, that's the case. But yes, the sooner the better. Okay, 2015. Oh, any other discussion? I am happy with the number of teams and juniors competitors that we ended up getting. That's great. Okay, moving on to the 2015 IJA Festival. We got a little report from Veronique. Any discussion regarding that?
It says no alcohol will be on site. I guess, has there been discussion? We've talked about Renegades, right? Where's Renegade going to be held?
That's going to be at the Circus School. So that won't be a concern about that one. This is Le Malou is the gym where people will have camping access and also where the open gym will be.
Oh, okay.
And no shows or anything like that.
Okay.
And they're gonna have a vending tent. Turbo is gonna have a vending tent for alcohol at the Circus School, so that won't be a problem for Renegades. Okay, any other discussion? We are also making progress with the Imperial Theater and Jacques Le Malou contracts. We just had the last month we talked about getting the Jacques Le Malou one edited because there were a bunch of typos and stuff, and also figuring out when the payments were going to be due other than the down payment. So she's figuring out those things. And she just sent it back to me recently, so I need to review that and get that signed, and that'll be done. Imperial Theater, we still have a few edits to do. Any other discussion? One thing I will say is I've had primary contact with Veronique, and when I leave the board, I would plan to not be the primary contact with her for the 2015 festival, so that's just something that the future board is going to want to consider. I think it'll be really important to have somebody who's kind of working directly with her throughout the year. And so figuring out who that's going to be and how that transition is going to happen and stuff will be good. Moving on to future festival planning, Mike Sullivan.
Okay, thank you, Erin. We have gotten a draft contract for El Paso 2016 that is in pretty good shape, very professionally done. We have about 6 minor items that we want to negotiate with them, and they are open to negotiation on all of them. They don't see any problem with our resolution on all those things. So I think by before next board meeting, we will have a good contract to sign or to recommend that we sign, and that will take care of everything for El Paso as far as our main facilities go. Meanwhile, I have been working with our very enthusiastic and very professional CVB there in El Paso on our hotel blocks. We have a little bit of an embarrassment of riches in El Paso in that the hotels are offering us more rooms at a better rate than we could ever use. And so as to not disappoint anybody and to not overcommit on anything, we have talked to them about reducing the size of the block at our two secondary hotels and offering those rooms at a slightly higher rate for a limited number of rooms for people who can reserve well in advance and grab those rooms while they're available. Now, again, these are beautiful hotels that are a little bit farther away, about a 5 or 10 minute walk from the convention center, but they're still excellent values. And the hotels have still given us a very, very good rate. I've uploaded just a few minutes ago revised worksheets for the hotel blocks and pricing. I think it's all going to work out. I would recommend that we accept the revised rates and blocks. I think everything is very realistic now. People that want to get the best value for their money while giving up a little bit of convenience can stay at the Holiday Inn at $95 a night, walk 10 minutes or less probably to the venues and get a free breakfast for every registered guest. People can spend a little bit less, not get a free breakfast at the DoubleTree, and people can spend still less, not get a free breakfast at the Camino Real, but have a one-minute walk to all of the venues. The big thing that we need to remember is that for every person that stays at the Camino Real, IJA gets paid $10 a night. So we definitely want to maximize the number of rooms that we promote and fill at the Camino Real.
And that's so the cheaper one you said?
What's that, Erin?
That's the cheaper one is what you said?
It will now be the cheapest hotel in El Paso for our group of the three, yes.
Okay.
And so that's about it. Everything else is going well. Since we last talked, I went on two other site visits for potential 2017 sites. Dubuque, Iowa, a small, very small, old river city on the Mississippi River, not terribly far away from where we were in early 2000s in Davenport. They have a lot of the things we like. They're missing a few things, most importantly, any kind of affordable air access. The only way to fly to Dubuque is through O'Hare Airport on American Airlines, and that can be both inconvenient and expensive for people. Other than that, everything looks nice, and I am going to keep Dubuque on our short list for 2017 as we work throughout the year. I also visited Athens, Georgia, the southernmost city, if we would ever go there, besides El Paso, of course. It's the home of the University of Georgia, and all of their facilities are adjacent to the downtown and the campus. So they have tons of very reasonably priced restaurants and bars. They have a nice selection of moderate to budget-priced lodging. They have a couple of great renegade venues for us, and they have a beautiful, beautiful venue complex called the Classic Center, which is where our gym would be and our theater. Everything looks good. Price on the facility itself is a little high. Prices on the hotel is a little high. I'm very worried about how hot and humid it would be in Athens in mid-July. And like Dubuque, there is no good air access. There is no direct commercial service to Athens, Georgia. It's about an hour and 15 minutes drive from Atlanta. But they do have 19 daily scheduled shuttles to bring people from Atlanta Hartsfield International Airport to the campus and downtown. So anyway, those are my two good prospects for 2017. We now have the luxury of having about 6 to 9 months to look for some more and find a good one before we need to move on a decision by next spring. So that's my Future Fest site report, and I'd be happy to accept any questions.
Okay. I had a couple things I wanted to bring up about El Paso. Just
yes.
One being, I know we've talked about it, Mike, but one being that they're going to need a $5,000 or so deposit by June 20th to hold the spot. And I just wanted to, Scott, you know, run that by you. I know there's issues about or concerns about cash flow.
Yes.
And that would be before our June 30th deadline, so it's hard to say how much more cash flow we'd have at that point, but just something to think about and talk about.
Yes, I agree. It is something to think about and talk about. The other three cash deposit deadlines are all things we need to schedule and budget for. To tell you the truth, I think we're going to run into this a lot more often. All of the cities that we've talked to recently are going to be asking for cash deposits on something like this kind of schedule.
Right.
So, by looking at our 990, it looks like we have plenty of cash. I don't know if any of that is committed, but it looks like we can pay the deposit for El Paso without any problem, unless I'm missing something.
No, and you're right. We do have the cash available right now.
I think the main thing is I know we're going to have a lot of payments for the upcoming festival. We also have a bunch of payments for the 2014 or 2015 site in Quebec coming up. And there is some of that money that is dedicated to things like the YET program and different allocations. But yeah, I mean, Scott, if you're feeling like we've got plenty, then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in the next few weeks, I'll be sure to stay in touch with Scott and I guess our new treasurer or Holly, whoever it is, and make sure that that's not going to be a problem for this first payment.
Great. And I know for at this point for Canada, it's only $1,000 for the theater, I believe, and $1,000 for the gym space as well. So it's not overly pricey. The other thing to mention was the thing that I brought up. I emailed Mike. I talked to several people from Mexico after we decided on El Paso, knowing that was kind of one of my big reasons for thinking it could be a good venue. And all of them were like, no way can you pass through Texas without having a visa. And they, like, didn't believe me. And I tried doing some research and then kind of passed it over to Mike because I couldn't find anything out. And he found that they do require what they call a pass. A border crossing
border,
card?
Border crossing card, yes. Well, I think there's more to it.
$160, which is close to, $1,200 pesos, something like that, which is a lot of money on top of a festival. So that's just another thing to be well aware of. But.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true. But remember, we're telling people 2 years in advance, and I think we can get creative about helping Mexican nationals that want to come to our festival. I outline that in my future fest report. The other thing to think about is if they decide to fly, I guess, you know, people would be able to fly. Money is not that big a concern for them or as big a concern. But if they fly and they fly on any of the major carriers, they won't need a visa or a border crossing card. The passport will be enough for them because all the big carriers have what's called a visa waiver agreement. And if you're just visiting and have ties to Mexico and have a return ticket, you don't need a lot of odious paperwork in order to get in and out of the U.S. from Mexico.
But you still don't need a visa?
They probably will not need a visa. I am going to research that, and I'll have more information on it by next meeting.
Yeah, because I know Hermosillo is a kind of border. It's not a border town, but it's close to the border, and so they do a lot of crossover business and stuff. Some biologists that I met there and stuff come over to Arizona regularly, and they just said it's you have to have your visa, period, to cross,
okay.
cross the border. But,
Right. I think it's something we have to make sure we have all the facts on before we tell anybody. And, of course, the Mexicans who are interested in coming will want to check on all this themselves. I'm also going to have a call with the tourism director for El Paso, who has a great deal of experience with this and should be able to give me all the information we need.
Yeah, that's helpful. Because right afterwards, I did, like, write the people in Guadalajara, and I told them something about it not needing visas, and they were like, oh, we can bring a bus. We can bring a whole busload. That'll be great. And they were super excited about it, and they said they'd help with promotion and all that, but we just want to make sure we have all our facts straight before we promote anything. So I think, I think that several people will save the money to go, but it'll definitely be way less people if they have to pay that extra $160.
Sure. I think we're going to have way less people from America going to Canada next year because everyone who doesn't have a passport will need one to get to Canada.
They have to pay that $100 too. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, $160 for a U.S. passport now.
Is it $100? Wow.
I think so, yeah. One other thing is El Paso would like or would be happy to put out a press release with us as soon as we have a signed contract to start promoting the festival, and I think that's a good idea, and we should do that.
Okay, any other discussion? Going well over our 5 minutes here. Questions for Mike? Okay, hearing none, we'll go to the YJA report. Ellen wrote up the little report, pretty short. If everyone got to read that, mainly where people are requesting buttons, and she's making lots of buttons made by our very own Louis Skaradek on our call today. and they've been a big hit so far. And she said she's making a bunch for the festival to sell there, and now that she's done with her prelim video for the team's competition, she'll have a lot more time for the YJ in the next month, and we'll have a bigger report for us next month. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll go to marketing with Kyle Johnson. He did not turn in a report. I will say marketing is going really well as far as Facebook goes and everything. We got 200 new Facebook page likes in the last week. It's our biggest increase ever. I was looking at statistics. And, yeah. Also, we're doing a lot of promotion for World Juggling Day right now. It's a big marketing push. What's that?
What do you attribute that bump to, Aaron?
We had a lot of really popular posts. The video by Cynthia Buitron from Mexico, if anyone didn't see it, you should totally check it out. She's insane. But that alone brought in probably 100 likes because it got shared 70 times or something like that.
Nice.
And then a lot of, yeah, basically in general, the photos, I mean, I've pretty much been very close with the Facebook page since I joined the board, and I kind of decided I was going to try to make it as strong as I could, and now it's like you don't make a post on the IJ page without it getting over 100 likes, and that's huge compared to where it started, so it's exciting, and it's definitely getting a lot of outreach and a lot of attention and making the IJ look really good right now on an international level, too, which is good. And the Tricks of the Month videos are super big hits this year as far as marketing goes as well. Any other discussion? Okay, moving on to the IRC. I did not write a report for this, but that's because I hadn't gotten the information I wanted, but I did get it. So the deadline was yesterday for the Mexico IJ Regional Competition video prelim deadline. And they had 15 entries, which is the largest entry yet for the prelims, which is awesome. And he said that the skill level is way higher than it's ever been in the past, and he's really impressed, and that it's going to be hard to be a judge this year with his report. So that's great. That means that interest and knowledge about the competition down there is spreading, and people are excited about it. So that's great news as well. He also said they're going to have Malabares TV is also a big Facebook, YouTube thing. They're a juggling pop store in Mexico. They're going to be doing live feed videos from the festival in Periflo, and they're going to be interviewing the IJA competitors as part of it. He brought up the idea of even doing a live feed of the whole competition, and we're going to just discuss what that would actually mean and look like more in the next couple of days. And he said they're going to make a big banner with the Periclo logo, the Malabares logo, and the IJA logo on it to help with promotion and everything. So that's great. I'm really happy with the partnership we have with this festival. Any discussion, questions? Okay. Moving on to World Juggling Day. I submitted a big report. Did everyone get to read that? Basically, the T-shirts are a hit, and they're going on sale within the next couple of days. And I have a feeling they're going to sell really fast, but that's just my guess.
That's good.
Yeah, great. And what's the other thing? Oh, there's going to be a photo contest. That's our next big push, is to try to get all the rules ironed out for that and on the website and promoted on Facebook in the next week or so. Any discussion? Okay. And we have the membership report from Marilyn Sullivan. Membership numbers are down again. So that's our biggest concern.
Don't be too concerned. They always tail off as we approach the festival because that's when most people renew.
Okay. Good to know. I am concerned that, yeah, a lot of people joined on World Juggling Day last year, and we'll see if they renew or not because that was 35 new people or so just on that day. Yeah, okay, good to know. Any discussion involving membership numbers? Okay, moving on to financial report from Scott Krause. Busy typing.
Sorry, I'm just trying to catch up.
Yeah, take your time.
Okay, so we had a discussion, or me and Aaron and Lloyd interviewed Dennis, who was our number one choice preliminarily before we had a discussion for the bookkeeper position, and he struck us all as on the ball and excited to work with our organization. So one of the motions for consideration is going to be making him an offer for up to the current amount paid to our current bookkeeper. And there's two reasons for that. One, he does have many years of experience as well, both in the United States and internationally, which are some very big things that we were looking for. But we felt that for the amount of work that we've asked our bookkeeper in the past to do, her current salary is a little high. So to leave room for negotiation, we were going to ask that we have an up to amount to be discussed later in the motions. As far as the financials go, there are several financials to approve tonight. Then we can talk about those during the motions. Q3 and Q4 are finished. The 2013 Fest P&L is finished. And I submitted the IRS Form 990 form on the 15th, which is our yearly report that Mike alluded to earlier.
Good. And how are our current funds looking? Do we know, is it similar to last month, or where are we at financially?
It's similar to last month. There hasn't been any major influxes or decreases in cash. There hasn't been any large payments. There hasn't been any huge increase in the numbers of people who have registered for the festival. So no change since last month.
Okay. Any questions for Scott? Okay. Moving on to website reports. Mike Sullivan, where we have some good news.
big news. We have had an anonymous donor step forward, and after little bit of back and forth and negotiation, they have very generously agreed to fund the IJA's adoption of the best AMS system that we evaluated for a period of 3 years. And we are
potential
expecting
to be ongoing as well.
Yes, it's correct. Presumed to be ongoing, but if anything changes in the next 3 years, it still gives us a nice head start and lots of time to save some money. So we're expecting those funds in the next few days, and we've gotten a agreement ready to sign with the supplier. And, this is a real breakthrough for the IJA, and it's a great thing for the organization. And the reason that it's on the agenda tonight is that we think something this big could be made public to the members and also voted on and approved by the board so that we move forward with everyone's knowledge and consent.
also knowing that it will be an ongoing expense for the IJA in the future, so that needs to be approved.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing, too, I think, is that it gives us a three-year stint, and ideally, I mean, just looking over what this offers us and what it can bring together that's currently just hodgepodge together, I think is going to be such a huge improvement, and I'm really excited to see the transition. But, you know, if after that 3 years, if it really wasn't fitting the bill, essentially the board at that point could opt for something else. But I think sticking with it for quite a while could be in good interest for the IJA.
Right. The other thing we've asked is that in exchange for the 3 years of prepayment, the vendor is going to waive the $2,500 training fee. So that was a nice perk. And they are also going to delay the start of the contract until October 15th so that we can get through the festival and get our plans made and develop a team that will work on this in the final quarter of the year so that our subscription clock doesn't start until October. And that way we'll have the new board in place and we'll have everybody signed up for the next 2 years on the board that will be working on the project.
And just so everyone here knows, I approached Mr. Louis Skerdek specifically after our last board meeting where we discussed the ideas of rebranding, new IJA logo, the new website coming out and stuff like that. And Louis is a fabulous graphic designer who's done various projects now for the IJA since I've been on the board, and I've always been super impressed. And so I approached him with the idea of kind of helping with this process of changing with the new website and potentially a new logo and stuff, and he was excited about it. So I think that will be a great thing to have on the board during this transition. So thanks for being willing to do that, Louis.
Yeah, if we can get any kind of new logo, new identity, graphics and stuff done before October, then that would be ideal for bringing up
exactly.
The new website with all of that new graphics.
It'd be great to have it all brand new right there all at the same time. I think it's the perfect time for it. So,
great. Can I just, as we can get going on that, as things start to develop and elections go on and that sort of stuff, and even if your ideas and suggestions and jotting those notes down as they come to you over the next couple months would be great so I can kind of get that going and have an idea about what's in your guys' minds and heads about that sort of stuff.
Sweet. Yeah, and it hasn't really been thought about too much as a whole, I know, as far as logo goes. I know Jason Horst, I don't know if you know him, Louis, but he's a graphic designer too, who entered that T-shirt competition for the World Juggling Day T-shirt a long time ago.
Yeah.
But he made a potential logo thing that was kind of similar to the IJA's current one. But I know one thing that's been discussed is the idea of kind of moving away from just the club and ring thing. So it's kind of more a universal look and not, you know, where Hoopers feel welcome and Toy Spinners feel welcome and different things like that. So that's one concept that's been discussed.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think it's something that the next board will have fun talking about. So
great.
I'm excited to see it. Great. Any other discussions or questions for Mike? We'll have that on the motion coming up pretty soon, too. All right. Speaking of motions, moving on. First motion on the list is motion to approve Dennis Morrison as the new IJA bookkeeper with a $10,000 maximum annual payment for services. Would anyone like to make that motion?
This is Scott. I make the motion.
Any second?
Lloyd, I second.
So we have a discussion.
Yeah, I wanted to say one thing about, and I sort of said this in an email, I worry that he will have talked to Holly for a long time. He probably knows what she has been being paid for sometime, the $10,000. I think it would be very awkward to try to offer someone of his experience and seniority any less. And I'm just,
right.
I've got no trouble with the motion. I think that's fine. I'm all for it. But I wanted to mention that as we move forward with this.
And one thing I was considering, Lloyd, is that...
I have a much better idea than I do about how much work is involved.
Right. One thing I was thinking would be a good thing for maybe you to follow up with, specifically, I would think you handling the negotiations since you've had the most contact with him and such would be appropriate, would just be to say, you know, we do want to offer you the position. Did you have any expectations regarding the payment or anything, trying to get a feel for if he's expecting $10,000, you know, or whatnot. And seeing, you know, one thing Martin said too in an email was like seeing if, I mean, maybe he doesn't need whole $10,000, you know, he's a retired accountant and.
Has any number been passed to him about? Have we talked to him about any specific numbers?
Well, we put out on the advertisement that it was, what, $8,000 to $10,000?
$8,000 to $10,000, depending on experience was how it was.
I don't even know if he's seen that advertisement, but did we, other than that, did we say anything to him about it?
We have, no. I think Holly may have, because he would have been talking to Holly about whether the work was commensurate with the payment and probably has a clear idea of what she's been being paid.
Did he indicate he had with amount of available time on his end to do the work?
What's that?
Did he indicate any hesitation on his end about having enough time to do the work? I mean, in other words, he has job description time to do this, basically?
No, he's retired. He's got plenty of time to do it. He even indicated that he'd be happy to, you know, take a sort of, not exactly leadership role, but watch out for us, which we haven't needed under Scott's leadership, but who knows? He's got the sort of seniority and experience to do that kind of thing.
Almost,
but no, he seems
yeah.
to have plenty of time.
And I think because the treasurer role has been such a hard one to fill with like, people, like I know Scott said, didn't have any prior financial experience,
right.
but took on the role with qualified people that know, you know, what's involved with being a treasurer. He's willing to help with that position and also like attend the meetings and provide reports for the board, the monthly financial reports, and also attend the meetings to answer any questions people have regarding financials, things like that. So that is more work that we would be asking of him than Holly. But.
Okay, but I'm certainly happy to follow through with him.
Okay.
And my thought is that if he was talking to Holly before this and he didn't bring up the fact that when we talked that, you know, it looks like you guys are offering way too much or way too little for this, you know, position. If he didn't bring that up, I don't think that having the negotiation somewhere in that range is a problem.
No, it's not a problem. It's just it's a little awkward to offer someone with his experience less than what the previous bookkeeper's been being paid. That's all. But I like Aaron's approach of saying, what are your expectations, et cetera. But I'm not
right.
going to be an incredibly hard bargainer on this if he expects $10,000.
Okay. Yeah, and I think, too, the other thing I had mentioned is that, you know, Holly has been doing it for I don't know how many years, and I don't think she ever got a raise, but that would be something nice to have in our back pocket is if he did start at $9,000, for example, and, you know, we were able to give him a raise after a couple years, something like that, to get him up to the same amount that Holly's gotten after 10 years or whatever of doing it.
I'm not sure that's a you know, very good PR point if you're trying to if you reduce his starting salary in order to get him a raise.
Oh, right. Of course.
my issue that I was raising with you, Aaron, was simply, you know, is he well off? He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need, you know, he works for some golf course so that he can play golf for free. So that means he gets some benefit from the golf course. So presumably he wants, you know, to be paid, and that's reasonable.
Right.
He doesn't need $10,000. If he does, you know, then it sounds like he's worth it.
I'll probe
cool.
on it.
Yeah, sounds good. Just let us know how it goes, Lloyd. And, yeah, if we're able to go a little lower in the beginning, that's great. And if he's expecting that $10,000, then I think he's worth it as well. Any other discussion? Okay, let's move to a vote. Anyone opposed to the motion?
I'm sorry.
Sorry? Yeah.
Shall we add as part of the motion that I would like to ask Lloyd to do the discussions for this, do the negotiations for this?
I don't think it needs to be a motion. I mean, saying with the $10,000 maximum annual payment, saying it's maximum, so there's going to be negotiations. That was what I was reiterating.
I'm just really I'm just really pleased with how Lloyd has been doing this and the results that we've seen so far.
Oh, yeah. So, no, I don't think we need it in the motion, but I think we all agree that Lloyd will continue with the negotiations for sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much again, Lloyd, for everything you've done with this. Okay, anything else? Okay, now moving to vote. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Moving on to motion to approve the 2013 quarter three balance sheet and profit and loss statement. Anyone want to make the motion?
I'll move it, Lloyd.
Okay, do we have a second?
Okay. This is Scott, I'll make the motion.
You'll second. Great, you'll second.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Try to... Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, let's move to a vote. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Motion to approve the 2013 quarter four balance sheet and profit and loss statement. Would somebody like to make the motion?
Lloyd, I move.
Do we have a second?
This is Scott. I'll make the motion.
You'll second. Correct. Just for the record, you're seconding, correct, Scott?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought I had. Do I have my microphone on?
No. You said you keep saying I'll make the motion, but you're seconding. So as far as the correct procedure of things, you need to say I second the motion.
Second the motion.
There we go. Okay.
Well, I apologize.
It's okay. You're typing at the same time, so I'm impressed. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll move to a vote. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. And our final financial-related motion, to approve the 2013 Festival Profits and Loss Statement. Anyone to make the motion?
This is Scott. I'll make the motion this time.
All right. Do we have a second?
I second, Lloyd.
Okay. Any discussion? I'll just say I know this is far later than we all hoped, but I know Holly was waiting on certain receipts for a long time, so now it's all taken care of, and we can add it to the website.
Yep.
Okay. Moving to vote. Yeah. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. All right, and this next one, motion to change the IJA Championships music policy to require that all music used be royalty-free music starting in 2015. Do we have a motion?
Nathan, make the motion.
I knew that was going to happen. Do we have a second?
Lloyd, I second.
Okay, and discussion. Maybe Nathan, do you want to start us off?
Sure. Well, basically, assuming everyone is more or less familiar with our current music policy, we do have an ASCAP and BMI license, which allows performers to perform live to pretty much whatever music they want to, assuming it falls under those licenses, which most do. However, those only extend to live settings. They do not extend to recorded mediums. So what we have had to do in the past for pretty much just about whenever, is dub over all of the music for the routines. There has been constant criticism that this damages the historical aspect and the quality of the performances by having the original audio track replaced. And there's been a lot of criticism about that as of late. Now, if we were to require royalty-free music, it would circumvent that by we would have no rights that we'd have to pay into. It would be the performer's responsibility to acquire that music, and we would be able to preserve the video of the performances in their original state. So that is the logic for trying to possibly enact this new policy.
Yes, and I'd just like to chime in that the music policy this year in the process for getting the DVD done has been a bit of a headache, for especially for Nathan. He's handled it amazingly and professionally, but it's riled up several different competitors from last year, and he's had to deal with the brunt of that frustration from those people. And they have valid points, you know, they want to be able to play the music they want. They don't want to have to pay for music, things like that. But most competitive things, the WJET, for example, has required royalty-free music as long as I've known it existed, and they've never had big arguments or problems with it. From what I've heard recently, the original kind of move towards our current policy was like a slow transitional period to eventually having all royalty-free requirements. I just, nobody ever took it on to take that next step. And I think now's as good a time as any, and I think the sooner the better. It will just be a lot less of a headache in regards to DVDs. One thing Martin brought up too in an email was defining what royalty-free music means. One thing I'd like to suggest is that we make this motion, but potentially, Nathan, I don't know if you'd be interested in doing this or willing, but as far as the actual new policy, writing the new policy.
I'm interested in doing that. The one thing I find is a lot of people are very confused with Creative Commons. There's a lot of different types of Creative Commons licenses, and just because something falls under that blanket term doesn't mean you can use it for any purpose. So you're right in that we definitely need to clarify and have a very detailed music policy. I would be interested in drafting this, and I would, of course, require a lot of people read through it and get a lot of feedback before we make it public.
Yeah, and so I would
basically, I'm suggesting that, quote, royalty-free music should mean the IJ doesn't have to pay anything to use it, to have it used in the show or on the DVD. That's sort of my impression. Now, royalty-free music may have some technical other term, but for instance, we want to include music that we very clearly have rights to use, even if it's copyrighted, it's royalty-free to the IJA.
Right.
I think we want to use that. I hope that's not.
Yeah,
you know, if the performer has written the music and copyrighted it, that's fine. Or if his friend has and given him the rights to use it on the DVD.
And I know when I competed in the WJF, they required a form, which they provided online, and I think you could find that type of form online. I found a local guy, and I had him sign the form, and there was never any problem. But it's basically, you have to either have that form signed, or if you buy it from a royalty-free site, they will usually give you some kind of certificate stating that you've bought this royalty-free music and you have this and this right to use it for this and this purpose. So it would have to be specified that it's for the purpose of DVD use, you know, video creation, things like that, public sales, but having that specified in their documents as well. So it doesn't totally simplify everything, but it at least makes it where we can continue to use that music and
are we also hoping this will negate the need to have the BMI and ASCAP licenses for the live performance?
Sorry, I'm having a hard time understanding you. It's a little, I don't know if it's going faster.
I think you're asking about if we would still need the BMI and ASCAP licenses if we enacted this policy. Is that correct, Mark?
Yes, we would.
We would. Why?
That's my question.
Because of live performance of any music. So, say, Cascade of Stars, for example, Welcome Show, those types of things, that's still live performance at our event.
I see. So, we wouldn't require the non-competitors that are performing on stage to have royalty-free music?
Yes, for the championships. And that's what's in the motion.
Karen, it may be that some music would not be free to use performing on stage, but it might be that some good. And I don't know if royalty-free music comes with that sort of allowance to provide live for use in a live show. It may or may not. I mean, I know that's not our key here, but if it's possible to get that out of this as well, we could save some more money.
Right. And I know that Kim has suggested that we back out of using BMI in the first place. ASCAP apparently covers most of the music that we've used. She says BMI very rarely has anything that's being used, and so she's felt that we should just go to ASCAP, and that's about $90 a year. I think it actually just raised to $120 a year, actually. So, yeah, it would save us some money if we could back out of that. From my understanding and just from the research I've done in the last couple months, because I've had to be filling out their forms for our upcoming festival and stuff, it's for a live performance of any music. So even if we had, like, a DJ play at the Renegade, for example, it covers that. If we had a dance party, it covers that. So.
Okay, well, 120 isn't too much.
Well, but the DJs should have their own license.
Right.
Shouldn't need to pay their license.
Right, okay, yeah. Potentially, yeah. But either way, that's kind of what they said to me, so.
That we didn't buy the BMI license the last year or two, only the ASCAP.
I don't know about BMI, and I'll be honest in saying that I got a random email a month ago saying we haven't been paid for your 2012 or 2013 festival for the ASCAP, and so you are currently not covered for those festivals. And there's a but: you can fill it out retroactively and pay the payments, and you'll be covered. So I have been doing that, and I've filled out the forms. Now we just need to make the payment happen. I got the one. Yeah, and so that's another thing that just needs to be addressed. Kim had said she'd been taking care of it and was going to finish taking care of it, but apparently she hadn't done it the last few years. And then she told me I should go to Matt to have him fill it out, but he'd never been told about it. So I was just like, I'm just filling it out. So either figuring out that somebody that the chair does it every year, which I think is probably the best idea, is to pass it on from chair to chair. And I'm creating a list of, like, things the chair has to do each year, and so that people can pass that on, rather than each festival director, which who knows who's going to tell them that and who's going to pass that information along to them, that it's their responsibility and stuff like that. But anyhow, figuring out how to make sure we get that taken care of each year. So, sorry, kind of off topic, but good for the board to know. Okay.
So one of the suggestions that came up in that discussion was we needed to define what royalty-free music means. So shall we? How would I go about suggesting an addition to the motion? Because we probably want to add to the motion that, like, pending an approved definition of royalty-free music before this goes into effect. Because we can't just state something. It's ambiguous.
I would say if we're going to say pending anything, pending a newly written music policy that defines royalty free music, something along those lines. But mainly that people might feel willing to write the policy.
I don't think with a motion we need to explain how we're going to execute the motion. As long as we agree on doing it, then there are going to be a lot of ramifications of this, as the discussion just showed. I don't think we need to spell everything out in the motion itself.
Right.
Yeah, royalty-free music is pretty textbook in its definition. It's more the fine print of how we enact the fine points of the policy itself.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if they've been willing to take on creating that music policy, he will be making those changes specifically. But I agree that we don't need to define it further. Basically giving Nathan the permission to move forward with creating this new music policy.
Right.
Which I would suggest be voted on as well before it's fully enacted. But.
Well, that's why I said pending something. If we make this motion and approve it, and for some reason it falls by the wayside, maybe Nathan wins the lottery and decides he doesn't want to deal with us anymore, or he gets really busy at work or something, and it falls by the wayside, then this motion will be going into effect in 2015, but it won't have the policy that we're talking about.
All the reason not to define, not to make it require that. I think we still want it to go into effect. We know what it means, basically. that we can put a publish a DVD with live music.
I'm fine with it as is. I do hear what you're saying, Scott, but I think
Well, can we use the definition of that the music policy must require that all music be free to use for the IJA in performance and video?
No, I wouldn't define it right now. I would say, I mean, if you're going to do a pending thing, pending final music policy.
I think it wouldn't be bad to add what he just said, not as a definition of royalty-free music, but as a statement that all music will need to be usable in the video. It doesn't negate the definition, the first statement of royalty-free music.
Right.
Does somebody want to suggest the exact wording?
Pardon me a moment, guys. This is Louie. I have to go for another obligation.
Okay.
But thank you guys very much for letting me be on this one, and we'll be on the next one or one soon after that.
Definitely. Thank you so much for joining us, Louie.
Yeah, awesome. I hope you get it resolved. I can't wait to get more involved. I'm very excited, guys.
Yay, awesome. Thanks so much.
All right. Yep, have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye. So if you want to suggest a specific edit, Scott?
So why don't we, let's see. So after royalty-free music, We can put in, that all music be royalty free and free to use for the IJA in performance and video. It would be like
you added the word performance.
He said that before too.
The ASCAP license.
He did say that before, but I would say video specifically. Because we already have the ASCAP thing covered. It's the video we're concerned about.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. So then if you want to type in that amendment or say that you are amending it.
I suggest that be a second sentence or an extra sentence there. It's not part of the first sentence.
So Nathan, are you okay with amending the motion to this?
All music be free for use in the video starting in 2015. That's fine.
Okay. And then I still think as the policy unfolds. So Nathan amends. Lloyd, will you second the amendment?
I'll second.
Okay. And further discussion, just as long as, any other definitions that need to be made further. Ethan can figure that out as he's going through this process of updating the music policy. Okay. Any
real quick here, is that accurate to say I'm the one that added the amendment?
You have to amend the motion because you made the motion.
Yeah, I can suggest an amendment, but I can't make the amendment because it's your motion.
So I'm amending it on behalf of you for suggesting it?
Yeah.
Well, you're amending the motion because you made the motion.
Okay.
Essentially. And so you need to be willing to amend it in order for it to continue.
Okay.
Any other discussion? All right, we'll move to a vote. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. And final motion of the night, motion to accept the anonymous donation, $19,485, to fund the adoption and operation of the Your Membership Association Management System for a term of 3 years beginning October 15th, 2014, as described in this month's AMS project report. Do we have a motion?
I move, Lloyd.
Okay. Do we have a second?
This is Scott. I'll make the motion.
You'll second the motion.
But I like making them. Yeah, okay, I'll second it. Sorry.
All right. Any discussion? Further discussion? I'm excited.
Yep.
I'll see that.
Finally.
Okay.
We ran into some communication issues with EWE. Do we have a plan and one of the things that was mentioned earlier was that there is a possibility of continued funding for this. And I want to make sure that we have a reliable channel to the anonymous donor to be able to let them know about developments, improvements, asking for their feedback. Do we have any?
Donor, Mike suggested going through a lawyer and having that person work through a lawyer, and we had a big email discussion about it. That person felt it would be a larger financial commitment and didn't think that was necessary on their end, and said they were fine with email. I did suggest that we kind of develop a communication agreement of some sorts, and I think that would be a good thing to move forward with too, is, you know, just something saying each party will respond within 72 hours to the other person, something along those lines. Communication will be conducted through email as requested by the anonymous donor, something like that. What do other people think?
Yeah, and also I think, Aaron, once we get into it, that we will provide periodic reports to the donor on the status of the project and updates and so on, and make sure that they're always kept in the loop on a regular basis.
Yeah. And Mike, would you be interested in creating that communications agreement since you're the one in touch with them most directly?
Sure.
Okay. And maybe just saying that's something the board requested and something that the two of you can agree on and I can agree on as well.
I have a question. With EWE, there was, you know, somehow certain things needed his approval, the fund, for instance.
Right.
And to my knowledge here, I don't know a lot about this, but to my knowledge, this is not of that ilk. That is to say,
Correct. This
is a one-time donation with possible future donations, but there's no particular requirement that every little detail has to be worked through with the donor, or any detail,
Correct. Really.
Reasonable thing.
Yeah, and that's what the person said in the email is, you know, once I give you this money, I'm out of the loop. I don't want to be a part of the process at all. It's with you guys. So that was his or her direct response.
So the insurance is having the money in the bank. We have it.
Right.
Go ahead. We don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if the donor doesn't want to or wants to attach no stipulations, that's great. But I think we have to know what our process is for communicating to the donor, even if it's just sending a regular email. As Mike said, I think it was Mike who said that. We'll just send a regular email report. Here's what's happened. You know, here's what we're doing with the money. Thank you again. That That I think that's enough, but I just want to make sure that we're starting off on the right path here.
Yep, agreed. And I think a regular report when you know, and a big thank you. There's not going to be an email or anything, but if there was like a big thank you, something where you know we sent a big thank you after the website's officially launched, something like that would be nice to do.
What would the ongoing cost be in the fourth year to the IJA?
$64.95.
So it's the same as the first 3 years.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
Which is good because that was lower than I thought, because I know, Mike, you had said that you thought they had increased their prices to possibly $8,000 or $9,000, but that's better. I like $6,500 better. So that is just something that needs to be passed on to boards from, you know, board chair to board chair, essentially. But after that third year, we essentially assume that we're going to be paying for it, and then we hope that the donor continues giving us money. We don't have to worry about it. That's something to plan for financially for the future.
Right. And I think that was one of the big reasons why I asked for a 3-year commitment, is so that we don't get cold feet and that we have a long runway so that we can make financial plans and prep our membership for, you know, paying our own way after 3 years if the donor support drops off or is cut completely.
Mm-hmm. And just so everyone knows too, the donor originally offered to pay 5 years of the cheapest option, which at which time Mike suggested 3 years as the more expensive version, which I think was a great idea because after researching the cheapest option, I do not think it would have been a good fit for us. So I'm really glad the donor was willing to go this direction.
Yeah, as long as we've got someone willing to write a big check, let's ask for what we really, really would like to have.
Yeah. And they seemed very happy to do it, so that's great. And thought that this was a great way to support the future of the IJA, which I agree. All right. Any other discussion? Four-year process. Here we go, Mike. On the vote. Any abstentions? Anyone opposed to the motion? Motion passes.
Oh, man.
Woo.
That was,
took a while, but we got here.
Never thought it would happen. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Way to go.
All right. Hey, Varia, I just wanted to bring up the topic of board elections. Martin, I know you have some information on how it was done last year. I can't fully remember, but I know that we allowed mail-in votes, and I just wanted to see what the process is for that and what we need to do to make that happen.
Oh, good question. I don't really remember.
Okay.
We in the past, we've always, in the past, at least before last year, we always mailed out we always, when we had a printed magazine, we included the ballot in the magazine. And both last year of the magazine, 2011, the 12th.
Right.
So the next year after that, we published a separate mailer, I guess, that had
an out of mailer.
And that, of course, cost us money to mail that separately. I think the plan was
I think we just did a newsletter. Last year, we didn't send out a mailer, I know. I think we just did a newsletter, an announcement about it, saying people could mail in their vote.
Yeah, we may have only just made the ballot available on the web. We may have emailed them. I'm not sure. We might have sent them an email with a PDF.
That would be good.
At any rate, we always make the ballot available on the web for downloading.
Okay. So is that
we also have to let the people know their voting number. Everybody has a 7-digit number, and that's new each year, so we have to we basically send them an email. I guess I did that last year and included their email in the their voting number in the email, and then they can either download or use the PDF in the email to print and mail in. So
that's,
I think,
right,
basically we want to do the same thing.
So you're okay with handling all that process this year again?
Yeah, just
and then
sending out the numbers and getting the PDF ready.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Martin, didn't we send a postcard to the people who have no email address? There's like 30 of them or so.
We have done that a couple of times. I mean, it might not be a bad idea to do it once a year,
right,
as that number generally goes down. But yeah, we haven't done it in a long time. I was sort of advocating doing that every 3 months, but we haven't done it in a while.
Okay.
So do you think we need to do it or not?
I don't remember that happening last year, but I don't know.
I'm not sure what we did last year, to tell the truth.
I know we were paperless, and that was what Dave really bragged about, was we were paperless as of last year, and so I don't know. My thought was that we didn't send out anything, but I'd be fine if there's 30 people or so to mail that out. If other people think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think so. But that's you.
Okay. Who would take care of mailing that out?
Marilyn.
Marilyn, who's done that best? Okay. If she's all right with doing that, that would be great. And I know Kyle Johnson had brought up the idea of researching online ballots for the future, and I think that's still a great option for the future. I think more people would probably vote who aren't going to be at the festival if it was all done online and they didn't have to print it out and mail it. So just something to consider for next year is doing that research, finding out what options exist for that. Because I'm sure there's something pretty easy.
I'm not sure I follow you. The ballots are always online.
Oh, they just fill it out? They don't have to mail it in?
No, they have to mail it in, but it's downloadable.
Okay. I guess that's what I meant, was where they would actually do the vote online.
That's a whole new bag of worms, shall we say. And
right.
You know, because
that's what I'm saying. For next year, I think researching it and seeing if there's an option, I think more members who aren't attending the festival would probably actually vote if they didn't have to print it out, mail it, and take all those extra steps. No,
I'll make the following wild speculation that maybe the new AMS system will make that easy for us.
Oh, I bet you're right. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so too, Martin.
Because
okay.
It's got to provide for authentication of the members.
Right,
know,
exactly.
New
that's
the
main thing,
before.
Yeah.
Authentication is the hard part.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Okay. Yeah, but if each member has their own profile and everything, then that authenticates it right there. Okay. So great. So you'll take care of that. And you know the timings and everything? Is it usually at the end of or sometime in June or July that you send that out? Or
The ballot can go out basically now because the nominations are closed.
Okay.
And so it's just a matter of, you know, waiting till we have the ballot made up. I think Don Lewis generated the PDF for the ballot last year.
We make those.
You did it, Mike?
Yeah, Don wrote a script, but we have it now, and we make them every month, every year.
Not the printed ballot. I mean the mailed PDF.
All right, I'll check on it.
Anyway, we will want to generate, we need to generate the ballot in PDF form. The ballot will have the nominations, the statements, and the actual voting ballot, which can be mailed in, and directions. And I will follow up with that.
Great. Thank you.
Normally go out end of May, early June, something in that time frame, so that people can, we might make it in with the newsletter. Maybe just put it in the newsletter or something like that.
I know what I thought. So I think it might get more attention if it was separate, but who knows? It's up to you.
I do have to send a separate email to people to give them their numbers. So that will be a separate individual email to each member, whereas the newsletter goes out in sort of a bulk format.
Okay. Okay. Speaking of, this is kind of a different topic. Any other discussion on that? Okay. I was just going to ask Martin if the World Juggling Day t-shirts are available, say, like tomorrow, where I'm hoping. Should we send out a special email since the other one's probably not going to come out till the end of May, and that's getting pretty close to the 14th?
That
was Martin whistling. Sorry.
They're coming to get me.
I know.
They're coming to take me away, haha. So, the funny part.
Love that
song.
And all that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could send out a special email. I could send out a special email if you want to just announce the t-shirts. Or if we get the ballot ready really quickly, maybe we could put both of those in one email.
Okay. Yeah, and it could be about the t-shirts. And also, like, encouraging people to register for World Juggling Day, you know, something like that.
The t-shirts up in the store now?
No, that's what we're waiting on. We're waiting on a picture from Robbie for the store and the exact numbers from Jeremiah, and then Heather's going to add it. So they should be available tomorrow or the next day at the latest.
Okay, and Heather's ready to
yep.
create this item. Okay.
Yeah.
And what day is WJD this year?
June 14th.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I'll just let you know, and we can discuss that online or through email or whatever once, you know, if we want to send out a special one early.
Yeah, I don't really want to send out three emails, one with the ballot, one with the newsletter, and one with the T-shirt advertisement in a very short period of time. But two wouldn't be awful.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if we can get the ballot real quick and send that out with the World Juggling Day announcement, I think that would be great. What's one other thing I was going to say? It would have been wonderful if the dorm rooms were a part of that, too, but unfortunately it's not the case. But we'll try to make quick progress on that, too.
You mean the residence
okay.
hall rooms?
The residence hall. Sorry, my bad. Correct, you are. Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, let's plan our meetings for June. Is it July that usually doesn't have a board meeting before the festival?
Yeah.
Not June, right? Okay. So, June. June 8th, I'm available. Anyone else?
8th is good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. June 8th and June 22nd work for me.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yep.
All right. And I know we had a request for the June 8th meeting to talk about preventing board burnout and board chair burnout. I think it's a good topic. Okay, let's make a motion to adjourn. Anyone want to make that motion?
Lloyd, I move.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none.
Oh.
Yeah, Scott, make that motion.
Okay, I'll make the motion. No.
Okay, and moving to a vote, any abstentions? Anyone opposed? Motion passes. Thanks so much, everyone. Great meeting.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yep. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, guys.